This is Hidden Killers Half Year in Review. A look back at some of the most compelling cases of 2026 so far. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Let's talk about this case. Anna Kempner was 18 years old, a high school senior in Titusville, Florida. In November of 2025, she boarded a Carnival cruise ship with her blended family, the fun ships. Her dad, Christopher, her stepmother, Chantel, her grandparents, and Chantel's two kids from the previous marriage, including a 16-year-old stepbrother named Timothy Hudson. Anna and Timothy weren't blood related. They were part of the blended family. Chantel is Timothy's biological mother and Anna's stepmother. Pay attention to the roles of people here because it gets confusing.
Say it one more time again.
Okay. Chantel is Timothy's biological mother and Anna's stepmother. So she's the mother of the alleged killer, the 16-year-old. She's married to Anna's father. On that cruise, Anna and Timothy were placed in a cabin together without the parents. Anna was found dead under her bed, wrapped in a blanket covered with life preservers. Timothy Hudson has since been charged as an adult in federal court with first-degree murder and aggravated SA crimes in connection with her death. He's pled not guilty. But today we're not here to talk about the criminal case. We're here to talk about what happened inside this family afterward. And before, because the court filings tell a story that raises questions a jury will never be asked to answer. Joining us to discuss, psychotherapist Siobhan Scott. Siobhan, I want to set the table here with the family structure, and I know I just kind of went over it. You got Chantel Hudson, Timothy's biological mother here. She's also Anna Kempner's stepmother. She's married to Anna's father, Christopher Kempner. They are still together today. After Anna was found dead on that ship, court filings show that Chantel and Christopher expelled Timothy from their household immediately. Okay, not a bad move. You got the guy that's accused of essaying and killing the daughter of your new husband, and it's your son. Probably not a good idea to have him in the same house as the other kids. Mm-hmm. Neither of them, however, have allegedly seen them since. Timothy's biological father, Thomas Hudson, Chantel's ex-husband, put a text exchange into the court record where he wrote, "I kept my mouth shut when you told me that you can't jeopardize your marriage for helping your son." Okay. Interesting take, but it does somewhat track with some of the testimony that we had seen in family court from Chantel and her distancing herself from her own son. It doesn't necessarily also read like a mother horrified by what her son allegedly did. It reads like a mother who has assessed what was standing, or that what standing by him was actually going to cost her, and decide that it wasn't worth it, in my opinion. It's an interesting dynamic that we're seeing right now. Parents walking away, not out of disgust, but are they walking away out of self-preservation, or is it pure disgust? I don't know. I don't know how I would be processing this as a parent if I were in this sort of a dynamic of a situation, but I do find it rather odd, the sheer whitewashing, or not let's say white, but just washing him out of the family. She's still with the dad, and the son's off to the wolves, basically. I don't know. It feels weird to me. Everybody grieves and deals with this sort of shit differently. There's no how to deal with your son murdering your stepdaughter for dummies book at Walden Books. So I don't know how one really processes this. But what's your take here? What is your take on the dynamics of this family of essentially, he's dead to me?
It's super complicated, complicated. And yeah, to really weigh in accurately, we'd need to know a lot more about the history and the relationships. I have seen teenage boys do terrible things, rape, mm-hmm. murder. As we know, they can murder their parents. I mean, we don't know. What has this family been through with this young guy? And we still think of a 16-year-old as a kid. They can be the size of a full-grown man and pretty scary. And I've seen 16-year-old boys beat their mothers and, you know, just terrible, terrible things. Murdering another family member is an it's mind-boggling, you know, that people have to try and adjust to how do we cope with this. Mm-hmm. So I can understand still loving your son, but saying, I just emotionally have to disengage from this. And I have to, you know, you want the best for him. But on the other hand, it could be psychological preservation for her to have some distance and say, I don't want to attend a trial. I'm just not up to trying to manage this anymore. And so it could be just a survival strategy for mm-hmm. her. And I don't know, I always put myself, how would I handle something like this? A little hard to imagine.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, we did that thought experiment yesterday, and that's why I'm curious about your take on this, Siobhan. So say this, because I'm curious about the history of the accused, you know, Timothy's behavior prior to this, if the parents' reaction is indicative of that in any way. So let's remove any legal counsel the parents were given and just take it from the face value of, all right, Timothy's accused of killing the stepsister, parents kick him out, and that's what I was looking up. He's living with the uncle right now, supposedly.
Yeah.
So based on that fact data we have, is that, because again, my thought experiment was, if this was a one-off and a spike from the norm that they hadn't seen before, as opposed to, hey, this has been a long growing trend and problem area for us, which way are you seeing this?
Well,
if any, from one small data set.
Yeah, right. My guess is that there has been some pretty aberrant behavior, you know, because you don't usually move from just being a normal kid with normal interests and activities to murdering your stepsister. And then all the other allegations that, you know, he's been aggressive with her, made her feel threatened before. And who knows what they've tried to intervene that just hasn't worked. And so my guess is it's not a one-off, just because people usually don't just go from normal to murder, right? Mm-hmm. And they may just not have felt like they had a lot of options. And I think I just go back to, you can still love your kid, but not be up to handling it anymore and just feel overwhelmed and threatened, and that it's not good for the other kids. And it's like, we just need him separate from us and we need some space and distance.
Yeah, because my thought experiment on it was, again, so definitely on the kids' side, this was an arc. You know, this wasn't just a one-off from everything we're seeing. And again, like you said, but I was curious about assessing the parents' awareness of this arc as well through the optic of their actions. Because if they didn't know of anything else going beforehand, and all of a sudden, again, let's place ourselves in this, we all have kids, what would your reaction be? Like you said, Siobhan, me, I'd be in disbelief at first. I'd be like, what the hell's going on? I'd get closer for a period of time as I'm trying mm-hmm. to understand what made them do this. This mm-hmm. isn't you. This is I don't get it. You know, you'd just be deeply disturbed and what, I mean, just see my, just like this, there's the same reaction. You get closer to try to figure out mm-hmm. as opposed to the final straw of like, I've had it.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
that's, anyway.
I'm finding everybody's actions here and, dare I say, performance in some of this rather troubling, because at the beginning of all this, if these allegations are true, there's outside sources, her ex-boyfriend, the ex-boyfriend's father, mm-hmm. saying they warned the family about mm-hmm. this kid and nothing was done. Okay. And nothing was done. If that's what happened. So they could, Chantel and Anna's father could have been saying, oh shit, like the chickens have finally come home to roost. We've been warned about this all this time. Mm-hmm. And now look how out of control this has gotten. And I'm sure if you're a parent, you're looking at that going, there's so much more we should have done.
Yeah.
But didn't. Now, I'm not saying that makes them killers. I'm not saying it makes them responsible for their crazy son's actions if he did this. But it certainly is not a good look. No. It certainly is something that you wouldn't necessarily, I think, want to hang your hat on or have following you around. And I'm finding the actions after the fact, going onto social media and posting words like, you know, they're looking for nails in the coffin on Timothy and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. A bit much mm-hmm. for a family affair. Like, why are we projecting this shit out into the world? I mean, everybody, I guess, does now, but I don't. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people do. It seems performative. It seems mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you who I am in this, not what the evidence or my track record shows you I am in this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make a stand. And maybe this is the wake-up call they needed. So this chaos doesn't ensue the rest of their family or in that house. But it just feels performative to me. And again, I could be completely off. Maybe there is a mixture of some performance going on here for self-preservation. At the same time, grief and loss and hate and anger. It's probably a bit of everything that's going on.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. But it just, I don't know. It feels a bit off. Let's get to the area of the fact that they're still married. I mean, I know they just got married, and then we're hearing some of the wording here of to protect the marriage and the relationship and all that. And they want nails in the coffin for the son. That's, you know, a few days ago, they were the fucking three amigos and everything's fine and dandy. The fact that this has shifted so dramatically, so quickly with these people, and a full reversal on their own child within a matter of weeks. I mean, what flips a parent like that? I mean, I don't know. I'm baffled by the whole damn thing.
Yeah, there's a lot that, you know, my guess would be these folks are not terribly psychologically sophisticated. And putting those two, kind way to say it, right?
I love your statements. You know, that's technical for nutter.
Yes.
Yeah, poor judgment. Obviously, as everybody has said, putting your teenage girl in the same room with a problematic, aggressive teenage boy, what was that about? You know, a very bad judgment. This might not have happened if that decision had not been made. And it can be hard for people to sort out loyalties in step families. I mean, that's kind of a consistent theme of, you know, do you love your husband more? Do you love your kids more? And of course, most people say you stay loyal to your kids no matter what. Not everybody is sophisticated enough to you know, make those decisions clearly. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just got to be this huge whirlwind of disturbing emotions. I can't imagine what these people are feeling like right now.
I'm sorry, Tony, just a quick interjection of one simple thing could have mitigated. There's so many things that could have. Why didn't they just put her in their room? Mm-hmm. You know, I know you're on a cruise, but you know what? I mean, just get over your hormones for a night and just...
Well, she didn't choose that. She apparently had the option to go sleep with Grandma and Grandpa, but she chose not to. That's the story they're telling. That the option was available, and she chose not to.
Controlling narratives is the only thing that's popping in my mind. Yes. As when you were saying, you know, what you're saying leading into this, Tony.
And it feels like Anna's dad is controlling a lot of the narrative, in my opinion, on social media and the statements that are being made. And him speaking for her, for the wife, for Chantel, in a lot of things as well, which I got. I gotta say, I don't know how the hell, I mean, from a psychological perspective, how a marriage survives this.
Yeah.
And I don't even know, like, how you work through this at this moment in time. It's a fairly new marriage. This just happened, and you're still together. That's the part that kind of also shocks me. Not that you need to go get divorced, but I don't know. There's two very diametrically opposing things going on here, and a mother here and a father here, and maybe some space, maybe some time to individually handle this and work through this might be the healthiest choice. I don't know mm-hmm. how you do this as a group effort mm-hmm. because I think you're going to have diametrically opposing views on some things just because of the roles that they play, being the mother of the alleged murderer, being mm-hmm. the father of the victim. Mm-hmm. Again, it seems controlling. It seems chaotic, and maybe that's exactly what it is, but maybe they don't know any different either.
There
could be other factors at play here as to why everybody's still together. Not that I'm rooting, like, go get divorced after your son killed your daughter. But again, it all just feels, it feels like the wagons are converging, and it's not necessarily to get to the bottom of this or to, other than let's bury the son and get all the blame onto him. It just seems like there's not a lot of accountability happening over here for the recipe that made little Timmy to begin with.
Right. Yeah, this would be a fascinating one to have everybody in family therapy, you know, and try to look at the dynamics. Are there dependency issues going on with Chantel, his mom, right? Want to get the names right.
I don't know.
She feeling really dependent on this man? And, you know, what is their relationship dynamics like? How have they agreed or disagreed? Because I'm guessing they have not, as step families don't always agree on how to handle kids with problems. And I would guess that it's not smooth sailing at their house. It's got to be
crazy.
Tumultuous.
Doesn't happen in a vacuum.
No, and then you also have the custody dispute going on between Chantel and her ex-husband, and the ex-husband's like, this is a crazy house. I don't want any of my kids over there, basically.
Right.
And so she's trying to watch what she's saying, and they're both trying to watch what they're saying, and it's coming out in court filings. But none of it is like all too positive about Timmy. It's just like, Timmy's the devil, go away. Mm-hmm. I don't know. This is, I guess, just a look into chaos.
But apparently the grandparents are defending Timmy, correct?
Initially, yes. They've been saying that they can't judge. I'm just paraphrasing here, but they can't judge what they don't know, basically. Let's talk about the uncle for a second. Why the fuck does the uncle want to take him in?
Yeah.
I mean, that's another weird part of all this. Mm-hmm. So mom and stepdad have basically written him off. His biological dad still is in the picture and apparently behind him, or at least being a father figure to him, not necessarily saying he's, you know, believes he's innocent. I don't know what he believes, but he's being a part of his life. And you have the uncle, which we know not much about, but apparently he's staying with the uncle. The hell is that? I mean, should he be imprisoned after murder charges? Yes. This man should no longer be free working at the landscaping business of the uncle. But again, that's another weird dynamic of this. Like, why the uncle? And why with this sort of a charge against you, how is that the best setting for this young man?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not something I would vote for. Maybe my guess, just making a wild guess about the uncle, he may be the one that sees himself, whether it's true or not, he may see himself as the solid voice in the family who can come in and rescue and do something to fix. That would be my guess. Stepping up, just trying to be a person that steps up.
And maybe that's what it is. I know I'm not trying to disparage the uncle in any way, shape, or form. Again, it's just, it's more chaotic dynamics. And it seems every stone you unturn, every page you turn in this book, it's more chaos, which I think it probably explains as to why we're here today talking about them.
Yeah, it looks like he is living in and working at the family business. I just, not much on him. That's what I was doing on the side, is just looking it all up.
Can you imagine being like a client of the landscaping company and you know what's going on in this community, and then he shows up to like put in your zinnias?
Yeah.
I'd be like, I don't think so. He's going to have to get off my property right about.
I'm not even going to say what they just might have popped over from being in Arizona, right?
Jesus. Yeah. Now, it's your thoughts in the comment section, Substack and YouTube. Feel free to weigh in there. We'd love to continue the conversation there.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Anna Kempner's accused killer walked into a federal courthouse this week and walked right back out. Timothy Hudson, charged as an adult, in theory. And we'll get into that. With first-degree murder and aggravated S abuse in the death of his 18-year-old stepsister aboard the Carnival Horizon appeared before Judge Edwin Torres in Miami as prosecutors pushed to lock him up before his September trial. The government argued Hudson is a danger to others, that his alleged crimes are among the most serious ones a person can inflict on another, and that despite release conditions saying he can't be alone with anyone under 18, surprise, two minors are apparently living in his uncle's home, where he's been placed for safekeeping since his mother has abandoned him completely and is sticking with Anna's dad. So somehow the solution is, let's go put him with the uncle and two kids. The judge heard all of it. He acknowledged that if Hudson were 20 years old, he would have detained him. But because he's 16, he called this case a different animal. And then he let Hudson walk out of the courthouse anyway, saying he wanted to explore options for detaining him closer to his family before making a final call. To break down this big shit show and all of the insanity that's going on here, Eric Faddis is with us, defense attorney, former prosecutor. Eric, let's start with the 10,000-foot elephants in the room. You have a 16-year-old being tried as an adult who's waived his rights to be tried as a child. He wanted to be tried as an adult. That's questions there. But anyway, being tried as an adult, judge saying if he were 20, he'd be locked up, but he's free, and he's in a house with minors, and he has the allegation of essaying and murdering his stepsister, and the judge is waiting for more information on, what should we do here? What's the best course of action? What the hell's going on?
What more info do you need? We have these allegations. He's presumed innocent, of course, but they're extremely serious. They're not only homicidal, but there is a SA component to them as well. As about as elevated as you can get. And there's also this sort of quasi-incest piece on top of that. That should give a judge very serious pause about whether the individual should be detained. The fact that he's 16 as opposed to 20, we're talking about a difference of 4 years there. In the grand scheme of things, that's not a ton of time. That's not a tremendous difference, at least not one that would typically justify allowing somebody to be on the outside during a case like this. But lo and behold, that's what the judge said.
How often do you have cases where it's kind of like piecemealed together, where he is a kid, he's 16, he's being tried as an adult? Then why isn't everything going forward as if he were an adult? How often is it where, well, we're still going to kind of treat you like a kid over here on some of these things, but as an adult over here on this, we want to treat you. It's like, to me, it should be all or nothing. But how often is it all or nothing when someone is going down the lane of what they're being tried as?
It usually is all or nothing, Tony. You don't get to kind of cherry pick like, oh, I really love these two aspects from this juvenile system, so I'm going to get those in my case. But then I prefer these aspects of the adult system in other respects, and so I'm going to sort of put all these together and just get the best possible scenario for myself. That's not at all how it works. If you're being tried in the adult system, the adult rules apply. You are compared with other adult alleged offenders. And to sort of, you know, say, oh, yeah, but you know, we got to keep in mind he's also 16. That's a consideration. It is. But it's sort of odd the way the court seems to be straddling these two very different justice systems, the juvenile and the adult.
Eric, do you see this as potentially paying more attention to the rights of the accused as opposed to, you know, the rights of the victims in this? Because, you know, I looked at the judge's background. When you can't do anything with the accused and they made their choice, you can't really do much about it when it comes to detention. I was like, all right, so let's look at this judge's background. And like many judges, he's very involved in community and education, and he does moot courts with children and high schoolers. He just did one there. And so I wonder if that gave him too much of a bias for the age, because he even said it, the age of the accused, regardless of the acts. Because when you look at the acts he's accused of, being released prior to trial with those kind of charges, it is so rare. We're talking like teens, I think, is when I did the research on this. And so do you think that kind of bias came into play for him?
Robin, so the judges have the law, and their job is to interpret and apply that law. And what comes in between those two events is the judge's philosophy. The law is kind of filtered through that philosophy, and that can color the interpretation. That can color the application. And so, certainly a judge's background and how they see things can affect how they're going to issue rulings on cases like this. And if this judge did have a philosophy that some might see as overly sympathetic to ensuring the rights of the accused, well, criminal defense attorneys are going to think that's great. Prosecutors, not so much. Wouldn't be uncommon for those sorts of considerations to creep in and find themselves in a ruling such as this.
Is this a judge who's practicing philosophy and not practicing law?
Great question.
there are more judges out there like that than you think, Tony.
Yeah.
There are some judges who, they have their own agendas. They have their own missions. And I'm not casting aspersions on this judge. I'm just talking generally.
I am. That, Aaron's not. I am.
Tony can go ahead and do it. He knows. But, And I think you've got to look out for that, because it's easy to get in a position of power, and then instead of having fidelity to the law, which is really that to which you're supposed to have fidelity, you sort of use the law as a tool to bring about outcomes that you think are right. And I see that so often on the bench, and it goes both ways.
So what happens if Timothy, the accused here, has a recidivism and he actually does another assault on someone, he breaks in the rules, which he's living in the house with two underage people, which he's not supposed to. I mean, so what kind of repercussions are there legally then against the person, the judge, or anyone else that allowed him to be out, and he shouldn't have been out because they're practicing philosophy and not law?
It's a question that comes up a lot, Robin, where judges in other instances have released defendants and that was the wrong decision. Those defendants went on to do monstrous things. And so a lot of people are saying, hey, can we go back on the judge? Can we go back? Can we sue the government? Can we, is there some kind of legal mechanism, some check, some control against that? And presently, there often isn't.
Crazy.
Yeah. I mean, that's where you end up getting people practicing not law as well to go after this sort of situation. Should Timothy go and do something horrible again? Little Timmy. The insanity here is that. I mean, it's layer upon layer. Number one, the argument is, why is he free in general? Whether he's with his uncle or whoever, it seems kind of nuts with the charges, and he's being tried as an adult. Add on top of that, by the way, Judge, there's two minors living in the house that he's been placed in. That violates the agreement, and it's still like that. The attorney even said, like, what more do you need? What more would it take to prove the danger? A second body is literally what was said in court. And the judge's like, well, I'm gonna figure this out. Like, yeah, I'm sure you are, dipshit.
The family has reps of putting bad people together. And that's how this whole thing happened.
It's all a bad. I mean, it's the whole family is just a cacophony of chaos.
So again, whether something bad happens, God forbid, now or not, is so. And again, we're going on the prosecution side, like the standard side. Is anyone liable civilly? Can they be sued civilly for doing something like this?
That's an interesting thought.
Typically not. Government actors are shielded with what's called qualified immunity.
Yeah, I know.
Which basically says, if you have a mistake, if you have an oops, can't really be sued like a private person could. There are exceptions to that. But
can they sue the uncle now? What about the uncle? Can they sue the uncle now? I mean, he's put himself in jeopardy, isn't he?
The uncle might be in a precarious position, but unless the uncle materially contributes to some civil or criminal wrong, we wouldn't be at that place yet.
this is why it matters with who people vote for. Like, because it's basically our system is this. If you're stupid enough to vote for this judge and get him on the bench to begin with, don't be complaining about any of the idiotic shit he does, because he has carte blanche to do basically whatever he wants and you can't go after him for it. That's why it matters. Like, if it's my biggest thing is always like when people go and vote, it's like, oh, well, you just fill in the blank. No, don't just fill in the blank. If you don't know what the hell you're voting for, just don't vote. Don't vote on that line, because this is how you get people like this in power. And I don't care how bleeding heart and goodwill they are and, oh, let's up with people bullshit. You're a fucking judge. This is, it's pretty clear as day who the hell this kid is and the decisions that he made. We can argue how he got there, which I think should be argued. But this carte blanche, let's just say he can go free. There's more kids in the house. What could possibly go wrong, Judge? Gee, I wonder.
Just look at the research. Research says don't do this. That helps shape law is research. Past events, you know, past is prologue with a lot of things. You know, and why would you gamble with someone's life on that? So also then is, so here's the, again, the world of conjecture and hypothesis. Is there anything that can be done then to the uncle for breaking the conditions of the release?
Well, is he breaking it, though? I mean, right. I'm assuming they went into this knowing. I mean, it wasn't...
We're Hammer and Eric, aren't we?
I don't think the uncle went into this, like, surprised, I have children. I think everybody knew he had kids, and they all said, this is a great idea. Let's put little Timmy Rapist here with the kids, allegedly, and what could possibly go wrong? I mean, this seems like a great choice for all of us. Ugh.
Yeah, and I think the uncle is sort of probably caught in a pretty crummy situation where he's like, oh, you want me to go like step up and try to help my nephew? Okay.
I got to do what? Right.
I wonder how that conversation went. I really, was it like, by the way, can you watch Timmy for a week? We got some stuff going on. Oh yeah. Timmy can come on over here. Oh, by the way, he killed this stepsister and essayed her and covered her up in life jackets. Hey, see you later. I bet you can help out your uncle with the landscaping business. Bye.
Oh my God. You
know, it's like, what? I mean, it's like, whoa. Oh.
It's stupid whack-a-mole, man.
Well, the thing is, it's so disheartening because you have a family like this that clearly operates with the baseline of chaos, and you're hoping that when the law gets involved after something horrific inevitably happens with one of the people in this circle, that the law would make a little bit of sense. Nope!
No, you know, I don't understand the judge's argument. Like, it sounded decent on the surface. And Eric, tell me if there's other ways to do this. Sure. You know, as they said that the system's not really equipped for a 16-year-old who is being tried as an adult. And so that's why they said it's better for him to be released. Again, I'm paraphrasing what the ruling here is, why he's released. But why couldn't you put him on isolation? I mean, Delphi him, right?
They seem to do it to a lot of other people.
Right.
Yeah, there are arrangements that can be made. And Robin, to your point, you know, sending this kid back into a family dynamic that reportedly had some problems and may have even somehow contributed to everything that went down. You know, putting the kid back within that environment, and you know, I know there wasn't the uncle who was directly involved, but gosh, things haven't gone so well. Just letting this kid to their own family devices. So, you know, there is protective custody. Yeah. There are other facilities to which this gentleman could be sent that might be more protective, less risky. There are options there. I just think the judge didn't want to look at him.
Yeah.
Maybe it could be a sitcom and we could put little Timmy in with the judge. Timmy and the Judge, Fridays on ABC. It's with the relaunch of TGIF. What happens when you mix a federal judge with a stray teen who murders his stepsister on a cruise ship? Oh, it's a Friday night of comedy. You know, I mean, that's, you know.
It's a new episode of Different Strokes,
like,
right?
Little, like, yeah, cameos from, like, people from other shows. I think it could be great, you know.
Neil Patrick Harris.
Yeah, I'd be like, what's Uncle Jesse? Why are you here? What's going on? It'd be interesting.
Tony's creative brain's going, man.
Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Links are in the description.
Mark Fry, Timmy the Rapist comes over on the next episode.
Oh,
I mean, if they're going to handle it with kid gloves, then okay, I guess let's treat it like kid gloves and you know, make it what it is, because this is utterly, utterly insane.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.